Welcome to the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast, a show designed for brand new sales reps working in the world of tech sales. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and I'm going to be taking you on a journey on the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast. Did you know that you can watch this show live with the guests on YouTube? This show is available on YouTube at happyselling.io. Hello, listeners, watchers, fans, and subscribers, and welcome to another episode of the SDR Disco Call Show. If you're coming into this for the first time, thank you very much for joining, and I'd always be curious to know, how did you come across this show? So if you can let us know in the comments or let us know in the podcast platform, that would be super cool. But if this is your first time joining, what is this show all about? Well, we work in the world of tech sales and sales development. So typically at the beginning of a sales cycle and when working with software, we have a position to help drum up business. And this could either be through inbound or it could be with outbound. And what we like to do is find really cool people in this space to find out what's their journey, what's their stories, and what can we learn from them to either inspire us to get into this sort of profession or to help us out if we're currently going through that. If you're watching this on YouTube, it would really be helpful with the algorithm if you can please give it a like, comment, and share with anybody that you think could benefit from this chapter today. And it's a doozy of a chapter. I'm really looking forward to it. But also, if you're listening to this in Apple or Spotify, give us a rating. Will also help get the show out there to more people around the globe. And that's what we want to do, help as many people out there to become what we call happy sellers. So with this episode today, it is a special episode, and I'd like to mention that this episode is supported by Hyperbound.ai. And the way this came about was we had somebody who actually used to work in the world of SDRing. They've now moved over to the dark side of marketing, and they hit me up on the LinkedIn DMs and they said, really like what you're doing out here with the show. I'd love to introduce you to somebody, and that somebody is on the show today. So without further ado, guests, could you please tell us, who are you, where are you based in the world, and what do you do?
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me, Neil. Super excited. This is a long time coming. And like you mentioned, Mia, our marketing lead, she's formerly an SDR, so not surprised. She's done an amazing job. Yeah, so a little bit about myself. My name is Sriharsha. I go by Sai, if that's easier. That's what most people call me. I'm based out of San Francisco, California here. I've been in the Bay Area my whole life. Grew up in the Silicon Valley. I'm a conversational AI engineer by background, Neil. So most people probably don't know what a conversational AI engineer even is. to put it in a nutshell, really, all it is, you know, I've been working on AI longer than you've probably even heard of AI. You know, it's been over 10 years now.
Wow.
And, you know, it's funny, everyone talks about ChatGPT like it's this brand new thing that just came out of nowhere overnight. But my co-founder and I, we've been working on these models for a decade. And you know, it's all culminated to the technology that we have today, and it's really exciting right now.
Awesome. And I think, again, so much a big shout out to yourself for coming on board. And as you've mentioned, like AI, it's been around for a while, and it's a very, very hot topic in the world of sales and obviously within tech sales as well. So having somebody who's really in the know, deep in this, I think this is going to be a super cool episode, and I appreciate that. So Sai, also, so you are the CEO and co-founder at Hyperbound. At a super high level, what is Hyperbound and how does it help people?
Absolutely. So Hyperbound, in a nutshell, it's an AI sales role play and coaching platform. So, you know, you can imagine, Neil, I'm sure in your career, you've done your fair share of role playing with your manager, or maybe you did it with your friends or peers or colleagues, right? And you'll probably remember also how awkward that must have been. And, you know, probably like even difficult to get a time on the calendar with your manager to do one, right? So what we've developed at Hyperbound is we have an AI that you can actually role play with. The AI will pretend to be the customer or the prospect, and you can practice role playing with it. And you can do everything from cold calls, warm calls, discovery, negotiation training. So no, it's a great opportunity to practice your sales skills in a safe environment.
I love that. Thank you so much, Shang. And to be completely transparent with the audience, like I see a lot of similar sort of solutions platforms coming out, and I was a little bit skeptical about this kind of solution, but I did kind of look into this, and we'll get into that a little bit later down in the episode as well today, because there's some cool stuff I would love to show our audience today here, Sai. But a question that I love to ask all of my guests, Sai, is outside of the world of, you know, tech, sales, AI, and everything, what things do you like to get up to? What are your passions, hobbies, and interests are?
Yeah, you know, I especially since I started this startup, Neil, I haven't had a ton of time to focus on some of those things. You know, it's been a crazy last 18 months, to say the least. But, you know, in my free time, I do like to sing a little bit. I've got a YouTube channel. I've got a TikTok. I've got a bit of an Instagram presence.
Yeah.
Try to post some stuff there from time to time. I do some covers. I sing, you know, Indian covers, English covers, all kinds of things. Outside of that, you know, I'm not a great basketball player, but big fan of LeBron and the Lakers. And spend my time watching basketball a ton. And I'm also an avid chess player as well. So if there's people out there that want to challenge me on chess.com, do send me a challenge link. I'm always up for a game.
I love that. And there are so many elements to you there. And I think the music bit really stood out because before we got into this recording, we kind of discovered that you do these things and covers. And I was like, dude, I'm a rapper. I've got my TikTok. I've got my YouTube as well. So we're going to compare notes after the show. But thank you so much for sharing. For our audience, what we typically do at this point is we like to go to our guest's LinkedIn profile to kind of check out, like, what was this person's history? Like, where have they been? What they got up to? And as a reminder, all of our guests' LinkedIn profile will be in the show notes, in the podcast, but also in the YouTube description. So if you want to connect with Sai, if you want to pick his brain or check out like what Hyperbound are doing, highly recommend giving a follow. But I remember before jumping on to our call arranged by the lovely Mia, and again, shouts out to you, I was looking at your background. I was like, whoa, Guy has been around the block and he's been in some really cool places, especially like you said, within the Bay Area. And you've been in some notable tech companies that I recognize. And I think we even said in our call a few weeks back that it's mad that we haven't bumped into each other and it's only now, but everything happens for a reason and, you know, timing is great for now. But, you know, Psych, I wanted to kind of get from you, like, we had way back in the day, like a software engineering intern, and going through all of these years, as you said, in the last 18 months, has been hella busy. But what's the story from that intern to becoming like a co-founder at CEO at Hyperbound? Please tell us your story.
Absolutely. Man, Neil, you're taking me way back, man. You know, that internship that you mentioned, it was at a company called Edcast. Honestly, that was way back in high school. That was when I did my first internship. I've been coding for nearly 14, 15 years at this point. Self-learned how to do it when I was in high school. And you know, that's very normal if you grew up in the Silicon Valley, for those of you that don't know. You know, you're bound to learn coding at some point. Usually eighth grade, ninth grade is when it kind of starts. But you know, during that process, I just wanted to get some real world experience. You know, I took some time to get this internship at the startup. They were also like a Series A startup at the time, so very early stage. And so I got to see kind of the beginnings of what it's like to work in, you know, a tight environment like that. But to be honest, at that time, I still didn't really know if I was going to go into entrepreneurship. It was still very early in my career. And it was only after I went to college that I really started to internalize, you know, the possibility of wanting to become an entrepreneur. But little did I know that, you know, I was going to do it so quickly, because I graduated from college in 2022 and I worked for a year at another startup as a founding engineer and took them from zero to one while I was there. And I think the first thing that I thought about was, if I could do this as an engineer and take the startup to zero to one, why not just do this myself with my own startup? Next thing you know, I go apply to Y Combinator, and I reached out to one of my closest friends from high school, who I met through choir, by the way, interestingly enough. So we met through music, and you know, he was down to do the startup with me, and the rest has been history. Y Combinator, we got in, and we've just been growing since.
I love that. And there are so many things I'd love to like pick up on within that size. So as you said, like, you were a kid growing up in Silicon Valley, coding is kind of like going to happen, right? And you do it from quite a young age. So I think the things that kind of sprung to my mind was there. So with me, obviously, I'm not a coder by any stretch, but the things that I fell in love with when I was younger, and I've said it on a previous episode, was we didn't have enough cash growing up in my family. But my father had a IBM 486 computer that one day he brought home back from the office. And he said, well, that's yours. And I was like, well, this doesn't look like a Super Nintendo, man. Like, this isn't that. But it literally had like this thick page document of MS-DOS codes and prompts and etc. And it was a Windows, I think it was in a Windows, no, Windows NT, way before 95. And I used to sit for hours on a Saturday morning playing in MS-DOS and just trying to hack the computer or figure out the languaging stuff. But years later, it wasn't until I got into college that when I like kind of got into IT, that I started learning things such as Visual Basic. And we were then taught to code and build programs, and it was Flash games and that sort of stuff, right? But as you mentioned, perhaps quite a few of my audience may not be familiar with Silicon Valley. And I remember when I went from London at age 20-something to going to California to my company Zora, which was in Silicon Valley, that was said as the Mecca of tech, right? But growing up in that, what was that like? Because for you, it must have been, that's just normal, that's how life is. But what was that experience like, dude?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a family where, you know, my dad worked at Cisco for a while, Wells Fargo for a while, and, you know, jumped to eBay. And then, you know, he's been at Salesforce for nearly 15 to 16 years now. And Meanwhile, my mom has been a similar trajectory, but now she's at Zoom. And So, you know, I grew up my whole life with my parents being involved in the tech scene. You know, they're both software engineers. And I think the thing for me, and, you know, we're an immigrant family, by the way, Neil. So my parents immigrated to the U.S. from India back in 2003.
Okay.
And, you know, they came here just like everyone else pursuing the American dream. And, you know, they've built up everything from scratch. And I think for the longest time, like software engineering for me was like, well, that's the default path. That's what I know. Right. And I just wanted to do something more. You know, I just felt like, well, you know, I've been given this platform. I have the privilege that my parents never had to actually go pursue something bigger. And my co-founder actually comes from a very similar background. We grew up literally a mile away from each other. And I think that's what really helped us connect initially and realize like, hey, we're 25, you know, we have a chance here to really go out there and build something before we have more responsibilities. You know, this is the time to do something and chase the dream. There's no better time than this. So, that's what it was like. And, you know, it's also interesting because when I was in high school, I actually started off my entire coding journey by building an app that went viral. It was, So it was a freshman year of high school, actually. It was a Chrome extension that I built at the time, built it in 24 hours. It was just like a fun side project. And I showed it to a couple of friends, and they showed it to a couple of their friends, and those people showed it to their friends. And it was just this like chain that just kept on going. And next thing you know, like every school district in the Bay Area was using what I had built.
Wow.
And purely off of word of mouth. In fact, I went from 0 to 25,000 users in a matter of 2 weeks on that platform. It's free too, so I wasn't, you know, monetizing it or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I think that's what really got me interested in becoming a better coder and like really going into this whole entrepreneurship path in the first place. I was like, man, this thing I built in 24 hours was suddenly being used by 25,000 people in 2 weeks. Like what the hell? I might as well do this. This sounds like the great, like highest impact thing I could possibly be doing in my bedroom.
That's freaking amazing. And that is pretty cool. So again, my creative brain is going a little bit. Sometimes where we create things where we just, like you said, you had no idea that it was going to hit virality and hit 25K users, right? And I'm curious, was there a side that was just building this thing as a little bit of fun or just something to test out yourself, but with no plans to like it, go and productize it and stuff like that? But then, as you said, you showed it to a friend through word of mouth. It just went, it popped. And started going around. Because what I found with creatives or people that come up with cool stuff, it isn't like you have this design plan that this is going to be the thing. It's, and excuse my language, you F about to find out. And it's normally by doing
that.
You then come around something and then it pops. But what was the initial like thought behind creating this extension? And then, as you said, you came to the realization of this stuff's really cool. I should be doing this stuff. But how did it start off?
Yeah, you know, everything I've ever built, Neil, in my life has always been out of a personal problem that I was facing. And, you know, I'm sure we'll eventually come to this later in the podcast, but even with Hyperbound, it came out of a personal problem. But that particular app, it was something that I built to make it easier for me to just calculate my grades. You know, when you grow up in the Bay Area, grades are a big thing. There's high competition. Everyone wants to, you know, get straight A's in all their classes. And so it's very high pressure. And so the looming question for every student was always, hey, what do I need to get on my next exam to make sure I can maintain the grade that I want? right? And you'd be surprised. It sounds like a simple problem, but it required so much calculation. Like everyone, I knew everyone had like spreadsheets that they used to like fill out and try to calculate their grades and keep track of this over time. And, you know, I figured like we had an online grade book at the time. Like, why do we need to do this all in a spreadsheet? Why not just have it embedded directly within the grade book? So my immediate reaction was, well, let me reach out to Schoolloop, which was our online gradebook. And I'd done that, no response, right? And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to take it upon myself and just go build it for myself. So that's what I did. I built it for myself. That's literally all it was. Showed it to a couple of friends and like, oh, can you send me the program? So I literally downloaded like the code and just shared the code with my friends.
Okay, yeah.
And then they were like, oh, like, can you make this easier to share? Like, do you have a link or something? So then, you know, Google Sites at the time was a big deal. I made a Google site, uploaded the code to the Google site. And I was like, hey, you can share this link with whoever you want. And that's how it all started. And so it's, you know, it was a crazy, crazy story. I did not expect it to go as viral as it did. But that Google site was the starting point.
I love that. So it's kind of like this, like you said, it was out of the frustration of something you could see happening. You then kind of questioned the why is it like this? And is there another way that we can do it? You tried to contact the people to get some sort of clarity and you're like, no response. So it's the whole build versus buy. You just build it yourself, right? And then popping it onto the Google site, it's kind of like, okay, so here's some open source. Here's how you do it. Go do what you need to do with it. And then it just went like wildfire. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened. And you know, I think the craziest part of all of this, Neil, is we're 11 years, it's 11 years later now, and people still use my extension.
Yeah.
And somehow that online gradebook has not realized that there's so much value in that feature and they've never built it and people still use it. And I haven't touched that code in nearly like 8 years at this point. So again, that's my biggest realization is as long as the problem is big enough, the solution, it doesn't matter how complex it is or how fancy it is. It could be the simplest solution, but if it's driving value, that's all that matters.
I love that. And again, if they're watching, you know, contact Sai, like maybe productize this, like just an idea, just putting it out there. But that is so freaking amazing, bro. So now coming on to that entrepreneurship bit, right? So I think there's like different parallels with our background. So like my heritage is of Bangladeshi origin and my parents come from Bangladesh, right? When they had their kids saying, yeah, not for me. I don't want to do doctor. I don't want to go on to do the typical things they would like me to do. And admittedly, I was a tearaway when I was younger and education just wasn't my thing because I had a problem and I still do with authority. But I said, I'm going to go do my own business because I see a problem. They were like, you have to play it safe. Like do this, like be normal and stuff like that. And I kind of said to them, I don't want to be normal. And as you heard, and something I recognize, you said, you want more. Right. But with my parents, it's like, why? Like, why not just do this? This is what such and such does. But for you, taking that leap of, I want more, what did that mean to you, Sai? Like, how did you at that age visualize what more could be?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I had the exact same reaction when I decided to go start my startup. Mm-hmm. My parents were actually not excited about it, you know, and it's all my family friends, my relatives, you know, they were all so proud and they really wanted me to go out and do this. But both my parents were actually very, very worried, you know, from day one. Mm-hmm. And for the same exact reasons, right? They were like, why are you not just going the safe route? Like you went to UC Berkeley, you know, you have a great, great computer science degree. Like you could totally get a job at Google or Microsoft or Meta and you know, make your like, you know, 300K salary and be fine. You know, I completely just threw all those out the window and decided to go the startup route. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to your point about, you know, why I was compelled to do that, it's a complicated question because, you know, it wasn't like one moment that where I was just like, hey, I'm just going to go do this startup and that's it. It was like a buildup, right? It was a buildup over like years of just like, you know, gaining confidence in myself to be able to go out there and do something like this. And that meant like not just, you know, technical skills, right? That's one piece of the puzzle, but also just soft skills, right? Like having the confidence to go have these conversations. Right. Being able to come on these podcasts and just speak my mind. Right. Being a leader, like being able to hire people under me who are, you know, maybe like 10, 20 years older than me even, right? Our head engineer, engineer is like 20 years older than me. And it's like, there's this feeling of like, you know, am I ready to do all of this stuff? And I think it took me a couple years to really gain that confidence. But once I did, it felt like very natural, right? And a big part of that is my parents, right? Mm. They struggled. They struggled every part, you know, every stage of their journey. And I grew up hearing those stories. And I'm like, why do I have to take what they've given me and just, you know, go the easy route, right? Like what, like I don't deserve that almost, you know? I might as well struggle and build my own life as well.
You're right, because you have to go on your own journey, your own path. You can't live a path which has been defined by what they've done, right? And in my early years, I kind of like used to get a little bit annoyed thinking like, that's not what I want to do. Why can't you believe or give, you know, support in what I want to do? But I've now come to learn over the years, it's not a case of because they doubt you in what you're doing. It's just because that's something they've never done before or fathomed. So the fear is that they want you to do it, but they fear the failure that comes with it. And, you know, that their child is just not going to be safe and everything. So that's why they pushed back. But it took about 6 years for my dad to turn around and said, okay, you've done a good job. Like, okay, this thing works. Like, I'm not worried about you anymore, Neil. So that's where it comes from. It's a place of love rather than doubt.
100%. And I think what they don't realize is they had these types of moments in their life too, right? Mm. I mean, making the decision to move out to the United States, leave their entire family behind and all their relatives and all their friends. I mean, I would argue that's an even bigger decision than me going and starting a startup. So, you know, from that perspective, I think, you know, they don't realize like, hey, like I've been through these things because now they're all done with it and it all feels like the past. It feels like history. Mm. But you know, like you said, everyone has their own path and we got to build our own lives.
100%. I love it. Thank you so much for being open, Si, as well. And we're going to get into the AI bit in a second, but there's something I'd love to ask because in my experience of being in tech and going into companies and helping them like fix their broken outbound engines, I've come across a lot of technical founders. And where these technical founders kind of where they needed my help was they're like, Neil, I'm not really commercially astute or, you know, talking to salespeople and talking marketing, that's not me. It's code, understand the technical side of things. You know, I can help with, you know, building things like that, but it's having those conversations with, you know, the other departments and people. And I'm curious to know, like, with your technical mindset and background, like, how have you found it working with different personalities and how has that shaped you to who you are today?
Yeah. You know, I think part of it is just my personality. You know, I'm naturally, you know, I always thought I was introverted, but, you know, I think my entire life people have told me, no, Si, you're not introverted, you're extroverted. And I never believed that until I started this startup. And I realized how much time I spend talking to different people all day long. And somehow I don't get tired at the end of the day. You know, I can keep talking to people all day long. And I think there's no better definition of extroverted than that. So, you know, from that perspective, right? I don't mind talking to people. I don't mind having conversations. I don't shy away from those. But you're absolutely right that there are certain things I had to learn the hard way. And like, you know, how do you, you know, for example, when I go into conversation with a CRO, right? Someone that maybe has been in the sales industry for 30, 40 years, and I'm coming in and, you know, a year and a half into my startup, never having done sales and just building this product and trying to teach them something that they don't know. Right. And that was in the early days, that was really scary. Right. And it took me a while to gain that confidence and realize like, man, there's a reason why we built this thing. And there's a reason why people want it. Right. And I'm not trying to teach someone or put them down. I'm really just trying to get across the problem we're solving and why it's so important. And if they understand it, they understand it. If they don't, they don't. And that's it. But, you know, my responsibility is literally just, hey, here's the problem, here's a solution, and here's what I'm hearing from the market. That's all.
I love that. I love it. And it does remind me, in a sense, not being a technical background, but with me and sales, when I met these CROs or VPs of sales, they're very analytical. They're data-driven. But your boy Neil isn't, and that wasn't my forte. I could definitely understand and crunch the numbers and give them the reports that they wanted to, but I was around more the performance of sales. So understanding people's intrinsic motivations, what makes them a character, you know, getting emotional intelligence within a conversation and within a sales cycle. That's what I'm really good at. But when meeting these sort of people, I had to kind of look at it of like, I don't like your way or the way that you do things, but there are elements that I can take from that, that I can put into myself. So similarly, you know, I wouldn't ever say that I was introverted and I just could never shut up. That was a thing that I got told in school, that I just talk too much. And that's why I think I love working in sales. And similar to you, I love talking to people. I love unpicking people's brains to understand how they tick, how they think, what's the thought process and everything behind it as well. But it can be very scary. But if there's, you know, a seller out there today who's thinking, right, I'm coming into this industry, I'm going to have to talk to these people where I may not be on the level, what's a bit of advice that you would give to them?
Yeah, I would say practice, you know, as a person who's literally building a platform to help people practice exactly that, that's the best possible advice I could give you. And this is where I guess, you know, part of the, you know, story behind Hyperbound comes in, right? When my co-founder and I started, we actually didn't start with this idea, Neil. We were building a completely different product. In fact, it was more along the lines of, you know, personalizing your emails at scale. And we had built like a whole engine to do that. And we sold that for nearly 6 months at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest realization from all of that was, man, we did not know how to do discovery. We didn't know not know how to run a demo. And we sure as hell did not know how to negotiate with the CRO with 20, 30 years of experience. And especially when you're selling to salespeople, you know, they're tactical. They know the game, right? Mm-hmm. They're not just going to let you fly by or, you know, sometimes they'll just say like, hey, skip the discovery. Just get to the demo. Right? Yeah. And that's exactly what I would have done, right? So we actually built Hyperbound by accident. My co-founder and I on the side. It was like the side project just to kind of practice these conversations and, you know, practice what discovery is like, right? Run a couple of negotiations, objection handling. And, you know, we were at a conference in New York, I remember very vividly, November 2023. Mm. And we were at a round table with a couple different CROs. And one of them turned to my co-founder. And he said, so you guys started 3 months ago and you're at 250K in ARR, you have multiple customers, and you had never sold before that. Like, how'd you guys learn how to sell so quickly, right? And I think my co-founder and I were like, interesting, like that's a backhanded compliment almost. But, you know, we were amused and, you know, they were like, it takes my reps 3 months to just, you know, make their first sale. You guys have multiple customers in 3 months. How's that possible? And we're like, well, you know, we practice on this tool that we built, but it's not a big deal. It's just this AI thing. And they're like, no, like, what do you mean? Like, I want to see that. So we booked a couple coffee chats with these folks throughout the week, showed them that, like, just a demo of that product. And Neil, you would not believe it. They were genuinely mind blown. Mm-hmm. They're like, you know, Otto and I were builders. Like I said, we've been building shit for 15 years.
Yeah. You know what, like, you're doing.
Yeah. And the fact that, like, our entire career, no one has been mind blown by something like that. And, you know, every call that we'd set up with the CRO after that and showed them that same reaction over and over again. Mm. And everyone's main sticking point was, why aren't you selling? Mm. Right? Stop all this email stuff. Sell this. This I will buy tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right? And that's how the journey started. So we actually decided to make a hard pivot and fully switch to this new product. Mm-hmm. And we spent like 3 weeks building it, launched it in January of 2024, and it just went viral, right? Like every channel you can possibly think of, like LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm happy to tell you a little bit more about that piece, but it's crazy how, again, it was one of those situations where this was just a personal project, didn't realize it was such a big deal, and it had to be brought to light, and it just took off when it did.
I love that. And it's like, that is a freaking cool story. And I really do love that because it was giving me flashbacks to that Chrome extension. You're having a bit of a problem. So you built something yourself. You show it to a couple of people, but they're like, well, actually the difference in this story is, well, why don't you go on to this part of the product? And then, you know, it then goes viral. You then launch and then it goes out. I think the only thing I'd like to know from a personal perspective. So again, I'm going to give us a little couple of anchors of how we're going to go into Hyperbound in a moment. But I would love to know, what was Size thought of? Well, I've been building this baby, but everybody wants to look at this baby. How did that feel? Then I'd like to just have kind of like a high level from you as to, okay, the world of AI, how it's changing. And then I think we should dive into Hyperbound. Would that be cool?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that was definitely a big pivotal moment in the company, right? At that point, it was around 6 months into Y Combinator. My co-founder and I were very bullish on that email idea we were already working on. We had customers, like I said, to an ARR, and we're like, okay, well, people are paying us. Sounds like we're solving a real problem. And we were solving a real problem, right? The question was, is this going to be the future of sales, right? Personally, I think that email as a channel is on a dying trend. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to continue to see it die. And so we're like, why are we trying to optimize something that might not even exist 2 or 3 years down the line, right? And so when you put it in that perspective, it became very obvious that, the future was going to look different. We had to look forward. And honestly, like another way we looked at it, Neil, is these companies were trusting our AI to write emails because they didn't trust their own SDRs, their own reps to write them, right? And so the number one question that Otto and I had for all of them was, so what do you do on the calls then? So you don't trust them to write emails. You can't replace your rep on the call with an AI. I know there's all these AI SDRs claiming to do that right now. That's a different story. But I was like, what are you doing on the calls? They're like, well, nothing. Like we just pray and hope they do fine. Mm-hmm. And we're like, well, that's the problem. We gotta build call coaching. And, it again aligned with what we were already building at the time.
Is, I think, like you said, pivoting and kind of asking those questions. Well, if that's not happening, then what's happening here? And I think that element of curiosity is a big part of your success, because you really want to understand why something's happening, what the impact is, and then trying to understand, is there something that can help that? So by the sounds of it, when you guys launched and you've gone viral, you made the right choice and the right pivot. And as you alluded to there, there's a bunch of AI tools and everything out there. And again, AI isn't new. And I just want to tell a quick story where today I was in a coaching conversation with a rep, and he was asking me, Neil, how do you use ChatGPT in your own sales, in your own business? And I use it regularly, right, through ChatGPT. And we were talking about account research, and we got somebody's 10K report. We put it through corporate objectives, strategic initiative, all this good stuff. And then we kind of figured out how would we find the right people on LinkedIn. It found all those people. What could be the hooks for emails and for cold calls and all of that stuff? And when the guy looked at me, he said, this is pretty cool. I've never used AI like this, or, I've just used it for basic search. And he kind of then said to me, he said, isn't this cheating? And I said, that made me laugh and smile. But then I said to him, what industry do we work in? And he said, software. And I said, yes. And I said, what is the purpose of software? And he said, it's to make things quicker and easier. And I said, that's the whole point of software since day one. And I said, software is there to automate processes that were previously manually and speed things up. It's not to replace people, but to optimize things. And he said, well, when you put it like that, and I said, that's how I looked at ChatGPT and all these AI tools when they come around. And I said, think about it, bro. Even before you're using ChatGPT, you're probably using Grammarly to improve your emails that you're writing out. It's just improving what you're already putting into it. But sorry, I went off on a bit of a tangent, but my question to you is AI, what is it for you right now? And what are you seeing and how is it affecting the sales space?
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts on this, but, I'll keep it, simple and short. Really, I think that there's a lot of noise out there right now. And, everyone's talking about AI. And what I tell everyone that's looking at AI tools right now is stop with the AI. Just take a second and just look at your business and figure out what are the actual problems that you need to solve. If you're leading an SDR team, that might look like maybe your cold call conversions are down, right? Maybe you're not getting a great connect rate, right? Less than 4%. 4% is the industry average, I believe. Don't quote me on that. But if you're anything lower than that, then you need to upgrade whatever data provider that you're using. Or maybe it's that you are getting enough conversations, but you're still not able to convert. Or maybe you don't even have a script that works, right? And you just need to kind of overhaul the entire script and come up with something new. Right. Or maybe you just need to replace the entire team and gung-ho, go full gung-ho and just get brand new people. So there's you got to figure out what is the actual problem and then figure out what solution fits into that. Right. Whether it's AI or not, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
For example, like the data piece, right? There's all these companies right now, they're like, oh, we use AI to verify our data and to better scrape the best data possible. Who cares how they do it? Just as long as the data is actually good, that's what matters to you, right? And I think too many people get lost in the, oh, this uses AI, this doesn't, so the AI one must be better. Well, that's not necessarily true, right? No. AI, in fact, makes a lot of mistakes. I can say that as an AI engineer.
Yeah.
It's very far from perfect. So if you're fully relying on AI for everything, I promise you it's not going to do it all. So I know I promised I said it would be short and sweet, but all I'm trying to say is that step back for a second and stop searching for a solution in search of a problem.
Yeah.
And figure out what your actual problem is and then search for a solution. That's all I say. That's actually a YC, a very popular YC saying, Y Combinator. And yeah, it really works.
100%, because I think, if I was to summarize it, is like looking at your process today and looking at where the friction occurs and asking yourself, why does that friction occur and how can you optimize that? How you do it is, you know, totally up to you and the tools. But I think the other thing you have to be very careful of, what I've learned, is becoming too reliant on AI to do things that you could typically do with your own normal brain, right? So I found a point where I was using AI for messages with friends on WhatsApp or trying to review what happened in a conversation I had with somebody else or somebody, this school, sending me this email, and I'm asking chat to like summarize it and stuff. And then I found myself not making my own decisions, and I was waiting to say, well, chat, what do you think? And I'm training it based on all the information. And then I actually asked one day to chat, I said, do I rely on you too much? And it said, yes. It said, you ask questions that you already know the answers to. And you should be able to make your own decisions on that. But the other side of it was to take my decision to kind of have a checkout on Hyperbound, right? So again, as this show is supported on by Hyperbound, I'd recommend everybody checking out on the show notes. But if we quickly come over to your website, again, I'm going to give a bit of stories to like how this worked out for me. But so like with, you know, Hyperbound, somebody comes to your website, why would they be coming to your website? What is this website looking to educate, and like who is the ideal person to come check this out?
Absolutely. So we're primarily focused on upper mid-market enterprise companies, right? And you know, the problem that we're really zeroing on, Neil, is change management ultimately, right? Like think like, you know, let's say you're an enterprise with like, you know, 1,000 reps, right? And they speak different languages. You have reps across different regions. They're selling, you know, a platform product with maybe like 60 different SKUs, right? All kinds of pricing models. You're reaching out to, you know, 20 different types of personas, and you have like a million competitors, right? Mm-hmm. Now, imagine being a salesperson and all of that and onboarding onto something like that. And also when you put yourself in the, you know, the seat of a sales enablement person at that company, it's also very overwhelming. It's like, how do I teach all these reps, all these different combinations of information that they need to retain over a long period of time? And it's overwhelming. And up till now, there hasn't been a solution to that. It's really just been trial by fire. It's like, hey, here's a bunch of PowerPoints. Here's a bunch of videos.
Go watch, go finish, learn.
Go into your LMS, complete these multiple choice quizzes, you know, click, 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 done. All right, good luck, right? And that's just not how the world works, right? Imagine a pilot just being like, I'm just going to jump into the plane and just fly it, right? And we'll see what happens, right? Or a doctor just going into a surgery without ever practicing it in a simulated environment. Right. I think sales is also a very high skilled job. It's something that's why there's such a big gap between the top performers and the bottom performers. And so I think, and you can't blame them. There was no way to practice those skills until something like Hyperbound came along, where now you can actually put those skills to the test. And it goes beyond just like, hey, watch this video and good luck. It's like, no, stop practicing on your prospects, practice on Hyperbound prospects instead. So, you know, you get the best version of yourself on every call.
Thank you very much. And that was a beautiful pitch. So I love that so much. So like for transparency, before I met up with Sai and was approached by the lovely Mia, I was a hella skeptical because to Sai's point, there's a lot of tools out in the market and I've seen similar things or in the same vein, right? And I was just like, and you're talking to my ego now, because I'm a sales coach. This is what I do as a human, manually to lots of different people. And I was just like, is this looking to take over what I do? So I even put it into ChatGPT to kind of say, like, what's the pros and cons of this, right? And there's a hell of a lot of pros, and there are obviously different cons and stuff. Sai, when we spoke, he said to me, like, you need to go check this out yourself. So earlier today, I went on to their website, and you can do a demo for yourself in less than 2 minutes. And I ain't lying. This stuff is freaking cool. I was taken aback, and it takes a lot to impress Neil. But literally, for our audience, if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, we're literally within a trial environment. And what I actually had to do was go in to actually do a call with an AI persona. And it was a VP of sales. And what I really loved was, you know, it actually said it's somebody who's rude and less inquisitive. And hell yeah, that person was. But I'll be totally honest, I literally came out of a real coaching call. And I said, I'm going to quickly just try this out just to check, see what this stuff does. So I wasn't really at my best, but I hit him with a cold call. And my goal was to try and book a meeting. And this is based on how I coach other sales reps and SDRs to cold call. And what I was taken aback by was I was testing it to be very blasé, or, you know, kind of give a half-hearted approach as if I'm just going through the script. But the way that it reacted and the conversation it had did feel real. And I ain't guessing. So guys and girls out there, please go check out and give it a test if you want as well, right? But like his vernacular, his tone, him being very standoffish, and, you know, me hitting me with the objections. But obviously I did the call and I was impressed, but it wasn't until I waited for it to then analyze my call that I was like, holy shit, this is kind of fun and this is kind of scary, but it's kind of cool. But, you know, admittedly, it gave me a 67% score, said a good job, you're almost there. And I was like, well, what do you mean I could improve on? And again, this is hitting my ego. So it told me that, you know, on the scorecard, I used a permission-based opener. It did advise that I didn't do any research, which is true because I wasn't looking to research this prospect. But it gave me my takeaways. It helped me. You know, I did good on the closing and all of that. And, you know, it said social proof, which I did. And, you know, it completely reviewed the whole thing. And I'm not going to lie, Sai, I was like, I was happy with myself that I booked a meeting in less than 4 minutes. Sweet. But, tell me what's going on here. Like, how did this do what it did to me?
Yeah. So first of all, congratulations on booking the meeting. This is actually one of the hardest bots that we have ever put out on Hyperbound. Yeah. And actually Alex DuPont here, yeah, his book rate, I think it's around like 10%, something like that. Mm. It's pretty, yeah, 10.1%. So this is one of the hardest bots. It's really hard. Most people don't manage to book a meeting with Alex DuPont. So first of all, that was amazing.
I feel special. Thank you.
Yep. But yeah, so, you know, what you're seeing on that screen, Neil, after is basically, like you said, it's analyzing the transcript of the call. And we've set up a scorecard here. It's a default scorecard that's just out of the box, right? Obviously, every company has a different way of measuring what good looks like on their cold calls. So, you know, this is just one take on that. But what the AI does is it reads the transcript, looks at exactly where you could have done better, tells you why you were scored a certain way on each of those different criteria, and then it tells you what you could have done differently next time. And it's not just like surface level stuff. It's actually pulling out quotes from your transcript and telling you, hey, remember when you said this at this part of the call? Here's why that wasn't the greatest way to position that. Maybe you could have done it this way instead. And it gives you like quotes on how you could have done that. Mm-hmm. And the way I like to describe this to all our customers, Neil, is it's as if your manager was literally sitting next to you and within like 10 seconds just gave you all of this feedback, mm-hmm. right? And the beautiful part about it is you could be in your bedroom, sleeping on your bed at 2 a.m. and do this and, you know, you don't have to set a time on anyone's calendar.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very cool. I personally improved so much after using Hyperbound. I attribute pretty much like everything I've learned over the last 18 months as a salesperson to Hyperbound, honestly.
I love that. And again, if you're like kind of learned this in Silicon Valley, that you need to be eating your own dog food in order to believe this and be able to sell it as well and to be using it. But I think, like, again, coming into this as the skeptic prior, I was just like, I really wonder, like, again, because I just compare things to ChatGPT because that's my main AI tool that I use day to day, right? But seeing the level that it went to, because chat can't do this, because I will take meeting summaries and I put it into chat and I ask it to analyze how I've done well. And, you know, it gives me surface level stuff. But coming to that point of, you know, imagine having your manager next to you. The problem that I've noticed as a coach, because I'm external, I'm not somebody's manager, I'm their coach, is there is sometimes with managers, and I used to do this myself, is we have a bias. You know, we have this bias with our rep as to where we think they should improve. And sometimes that bias can get in the way of good coaching. But having this objectively put out in front of me, again, for somebody that likes AI and likes things to be given to me objectively, it really did impress me because, you know, this Mr. DuPont, he was a hard guy. I'm very happy that I got to book a meeting with the hardest bot. But it was really nice because, again, it was so realistic because I was given the, you know, premise that this guy's looking for a new data provider. So in my head, I was just like, cool, just go into role play as you normally would now and go through what you coach other reps to do. And let's see if this shit actually works. I know it works in real life because people tell me they book meetings and, you know, they hit targets. But I was like, I want to test it out because I get to do a role play with another person, but I'm more leading that. I'm not really being tested. But this tested me. And I can definitely see a lot of value in it. And it scared me. Scared me in a good way, right?
Because I was just like... people are always shocked by how real the bot can be. You know, every time, like, I think people come in thinking, ah, oh, it's going to be like another Siri or it's going to be like another Google Home.
Yeah.
Right. And then they talk to it and realize, oh, man, that actually sounded like a real person. 100%. And that reaction never gets old. Like, imagine Neil, you're on a demo selling Hyperbound, mm-hmm. and this is the reaction you get to hear every single day. That's like the most rewarding thing possible. So, it's definitely very exciting tech. I will say one more thing. I like that you mentioned objective because I think that's the magic word right there, right? Most, you know, we have a saying at Hyperbound where we literally say the AI doesn't judge you. Mm. It just scores you. It doesn't care if you're a top performer. It doesn't care if you're a bottom performer. It doesn't care if you're nice or if you're mean. All it cares about is scoring you according to that rubric and as objective of fashion as it possibly can. Right. And we found that reps are actually more willing to take feedback from the AI than from their own managers.
Manager. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And from a manager perspective, too, here's the thing, right? You know, like maybe you have like a list of feedback that you need to give your rep, and nobody likes to do the compliment sandwich, right? Like it's frustrating. It's like, okay, I got to do my compliment sandwich one, then sandwich two, sandwich three. And then by the time you get to the fourth one, you're like, I can't keep doing this. Like I've ran out of compliments. I just need to give them the feedback.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And most managers will just not even give the feedback because, you know, they don't want to piss off the rep or make them feel like they hate them.
Yeah.
Right. Thing with the AI is it is brutal. It will give you all the feedback no matter what. So
yeah,
that's the beauty about it.
I love it, dude. Like, again, I've seen a lot of LinkedIn videos go by where I'm seeing other people or influencers like showing this similar type of setup. And I just sit there and I was like, nah, bro, I'm the real deal. Like, why would I let somebody do this? But coming in as somebody who is a coach, who's been a leader, who's been the rep that still has to do my own business and I still have to cold call and stuff like this, I can see so many scenarios that this could be used. I think, so again, to our guests and listeners out there, this episode is supported by Hyperbound, but for good reason. I'd highly recommend going out into hyperbound.ai, verified by Neil, and just go have a go in the demo. In less than 2 minutes, you can just create your free account. You can have a go. You can see your own scoring. I'd say give it a go and let Sai know what you think of it and with feedback. And I thought I haven't tested it yet, but I am going to be testing it later this week, is you can do this on a video call as well, right? You don't just have to do the call scenario.
So,
is that cool?
Yeah, so the video call, it's almost like a Zoom-like experience.
Hmm.
The only thing is the avatar itself doesn't have a video today. So there's a lot of reasons for that. Personally, we don't think the AI video is really quite there yet. Doesn't feel as real. So we just opted for recording the client-side video. So we record your video, but that's pretty much it.
Okay, awesome.
And the nice part is when you do the video call, you can actually share your screen with the bot and go through like a product demo or
no way.
Like if you're doing a demo call.
All right. And again, I'm geeking out now because we're going tech deep. But like, yeah. You know, with ChatGPT, I think what really made me happy like a year or two ago was when it went voice enabled and then I could actually have a conversation. And over the years, the different personalities and people that I talk to my AI quite a lot. Sounds weird, but I do because it gives me that
objective.
Most
people are these days.
Yeah. And I said, is that weird? And it said, no, it's not. So I was like, okay, I believe you. But what made me also happy was the moment that I could turn my camera on and it could start analyzing the room and seeing what stuff is. It can tell me about what I'm looking, et cetera, like that. But if you can like demo on a video call, like a Zoom, and say to the AI what you're looking at, that could definitely help out with, now I'm thinking out loud, is rather than just product demos, but value-based demos. So when you're trying to show the solution and the value that it brings, and it's how you have that talk track, because value selling for me was something that took a long while to do. I learned at a company called Showpad, but like my manager said, like if you could do the demo without selling any of the features, how would you demonstrate value? And it was through the art of storytelling of, this is how it used to look like in my inbox. I found this new process. This is now the process, but how would that look for you? Or how would that work for you? That's how to learn to do. So again, you're getting me geeked out here, bro. So I am going to be having a little bit of play with it. But I think the ultimate question that I like to ask all sort of founders with their products, and again, if you don't have the answer today, that's cool. But who would this not be ideal for? Like who would be the person that wouldn't really benefit from something like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's hard because it depends really on the personality of the person. I mean, I think it's very obvious that very senior sellers who feel like, you know, they've got all their skills down pat, they don't feel the need to do role plays, right? Like Neil, I mean, be honest, like you're an elite seller. When was the last time, you know, you just role played just to get better, right? And you know, it's not a bad thing. It totally makes sense, right? But yeah, we've found that pattern from time to time, right? Once you know, there are sellers that feel like, hey, I've mastered all these things. I'm hitting my quota. In fact, I'm exceeding my quota. I feel good. I don't really need to practice, right? And so, yeah, I would say for those types of folks, like maybe this is not the best fit. But yeah, then again, like some of the most elite sellers out there, they know there's always a level greater. Yeah. Right. So, you know, the really motivated ones will go in and use it regardless.
100%. And I think, you know, it's a topic about role play that I speak about a lot because I do it a lot pretty much every day with people that I meet. And anytime I'm with a group and said, okay, we're going to do some role play, you typically get eyes rolling and people groaning with it. And I said, here, look, here's the thing. My role plays aren't going to be boring. I promise you that. But I said, let me tell you like a quick story. There was a video I watched on YouTube where there was this martial arts Sifu. And he was running like a class and they were about to do some training. And one of the reps turned around to the Sifu and said, why the hell do we do this? Because if we go into a real fight, we're not going to use 15 block moves to stop that fight, especially if they pull a knife. And the Sifu said, you're 100% correct. He said, here's the thing though, you'll be practicing those 15 techniques, but when you get into a real fight, it's chaos. You have no idea which way that fight is going to go. Mm-hmm. But you're going to pick one of those block moves within that fight that could potentially save your life. That is the reason that we role play and practice. So it's not to learn all 15 moves to use them in a fight, but it's just to pick out the one. So I think with role playing like this, even for the elite top sellers, is to analyze how you're doing things because, you know, those that are on the top level of selling, they always know there's room for improvement. They're hungry for growth. They're hungry for improvement. But if they can analyze what's something you could do a little bit better, like every call I have, bro, I'm always reviewing it. I'm watching back the recording. I'm looking at myself, even with podcasts. The best way that I've improved this podcast is practice and just constantly practicing. But yeah, I'm geeking out. You've sold me. So again, for our listeners and watchers out there, all show notes for Hyperbound will be available on the description. Size details will also be there as well if you want to connect and give him feedback. Tell him what you think. Play with it. Like, let him know. Because I think the more feedback they have, you know, it helps improve a product as well. So we're coming towards the end of this chapter and it's been an absolute privilege to have you on board, sir, and would love to have you back in the future. But if we could go to that young Sai way back in the day who was doing that internship in engineering and you could give that Sai 3 bits of advice, what would those 3 bits be?
Yeah, it's a difficult question, man, because, you know, it really makes me think about the person I was like, you know, 12, 13 years ago versus now. I think the first thing is just, I would have told myself to believe in myself more back then, or I think I doubted myself a lot in the early days, both from technical skills and soft skills. I was always a little bit insecure. I wasn't sure if I, you know, I was ever going to reach the level of some of my peers who I looked up to. And so that was one piece. And the other thing is, I think I put too much pressure on myself growing up in many ways. I'm sure a lot of immigrants feel that way, right? It feels like you're constantly in a pressure cooker.
Yep.
But I think there were definitely moments in my life where I could have just taken a step back and realized, like, it's okay. You know, I will learn these things over time, and it doesn't have to be something that I just do overnight. So that's one thing. And, you know, lastly, I would say, like, I wish I had known that I could sell back then. You know, it's, I always thought I was just going to be a coder for the rest of my life. Now, you know, 18 months into this job, I think about it, I'm like, if I shut down this company tomorrow and just went back into the workforce, what would my job be? Would I even be coding? Right? And it's crazy to even think that in my head, because my entire life I've been conditioned to think, you're a software engineer, you're going to become a software engineer. That's it. That's your life. And now to realize, like, man, no, I have so many other skills now. I can do marketing. I can do sales, right? I could just become, you know, a podcaster like Neil, or a rapper, or whatever it might be, right? There's so many things that I'm just like, you know, damn, I just wish I had known that there were other paths for me to also explore growing up.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. And it reminds me very quickly of, you're right, you have to be true to what you love doing and where you feel that you should be going, right? And following that intuition. And it reminds me of the story of when I was at Zora. So Tien Zo, our CEO, employee number 11 at Salesforce, one of the original Salesforce angels. And he came to London shortly after our Series D came through. And he was talking to the workforce and the sales team to kind of give us a bit of a pep talk and motivation. You know, we're scaling up now with a sprint to 100 million. That's where we're going. And I asked him the question. I said, so the story goes, Mark Benioff gave him 50 mil and said, go build Zora. One day I'll buy you back. And Tien said, okay, I'll take your 50 mil, but that never happened. And they went public and the rest is history. But at that point in time, I said to Tien, I said, what do you think you would have done if you didn't build Zora and, you know, kind of gave that 50 million back and did, what would you be doing now? And he said, I don't even think like that. He said, this is what I need to be doing. This is all I think about. And I kind of felt scared asking that question. But he said, no, it's a good question. But being honest with you, I don't think of any other parallel universe. This is what needs to happen. This is my vision. This is where we're going. Like, credits to Tien. Like, he did it and he still does it. So yeah, you have to follow your dreams and you have to follow on your path that you're going to. But this has been an awesome conversation and a great path and chapter to take on the show today, Sai. And for our listeners and watchers, thank you for joining in with us today. Again, if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, please make sure that you give a like, comment, and subscribe down below. Let us know what your thoughts about this, about Hyperbound, the world of AI, what's going on in the world of tech sales. And if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform on Spotify or Apple, please give us a rating and share this with your sales bestie or your leader or somebody who thinks they need a bit of AI coaching. Send it their way. But Sai, an absolute privilege and pleasure to have you on the SDR Disco Call show. Hopefully our paths will cross again. But thank you very much. And most importantly, sir, happy selling.
Thank you so much, Neil. Appreciate it.